Hello, everybody. This is Again With This. Call in special number 333333. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hey, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners, and hello, callers. Thank you for all of your messages, your texts, your voicemails. We're going to get to them in just a second. But first, as we announced last week, Again With This 138 is coming up this Friday. It is going to be Let's Watch Daphne Zuniga's Family Ties debut. She was in two episodes. This is the first, season two, episode 17, Double Dates on Paramount Plus. We'll link it in the show notes. Her opposite Jamie Gertz, opposite Michael J. Fox. It's a true journey of prom dresses and hairstyles of 1984.
Mm-hmm. So many vests. So many.
Truly. So you can find more information about that at againwiththispodcast.com/club. Join us at any level and you will hear that, plus the 137 Patreon bonus episodes that came before. And now it is time to take your calls. And I just want to say, and I'll say this before we do this again, a lot of y'all, I know it's the era of automatic caller ID where you can't call someone without your name showing up on their phone, but a lot of people have forgotten how to leave a message, because there's like seven of these that are just in our doc as no name. So we treasure all of you. This is not meant to shame anyone, but if you call us in the future, and we pray that you do, again, we want to say, program this number into your phone and you can just drunk dial us about anything that's on your wonderful mind.
210-920-4699. That's 4699.
Program it in, leave us a message anytime. We will periodically be doing these, so we will get to them eventually. But yes, please say your name, because we want to know and give you proper credit. All right.
We do.
Let's get into the calls. I'm going to put the questions first, starting with clip number one.
Hi, guys. This is Meredith again. Thank you for answering my last question about unceremonious send-offs. I was actually thought of a question when I was listening to today's podcast, which was season 6, episode 6, and you had mentioned you would have liked to see more of Taylor and Amanda paired up. And one thing I always thought on 90210 was I really would have preferred it if they had made Kelly and Val frenemies instead of straight up enemies. So I was wondering if in 90210 or Melrose Place, if there's any pairings you would have liked to see more, or maybe like a shift in the relationship, like enemies to frenemies, or like if there's someone on 90210 you would really would have liked to see paired up with a character on Melrose Place. Just fun pairings that didn't happen for whatever reason. Thanks, and I hope you guys are having a great new year.
Thank you so much, Meredith. I think we may have done a version of this before, because I seem to recall answering that it would have been fun to see Val working at D&D when D&D still existed. But, you know, we don't expect you to go back and re-listen to these. We certainly didn't. So it's still a fun question. Let's answer it again. I'll go first. From 90210, we do keep saying, and we certainly have said it before, but Andrea and Steve, that was a sparky one. Claire and Val, I thought, never got enough of a chance to really play off each other. Mm. And might just have been anti-brunette bias that they just felt like one of those in a scene is enough. Like, we have to just keep a lid on it. And I'm going to say we don't really want Deshaun and Donna technically, because he can and should do better. Donna's annoying. Mm-hmm. But I think Deshaun and Steve, I think they would vibe. I feel like they would they would have fun goofing around. And on Melrose Place, I said this recently on the main show, but Taylor plus Craig, that would have been hot.
Yeah.
I've certainly said this many times that I often got a vibe between Joe and Allison sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And Sydney and Matt, I just feel like, I mean, for obvious off-screen reasons that didn't happen until after the show was done for, you know, Laura Layton and Doug Savant. But I think, you know, Sydney's energy plus gay neighbor. Like, it just seems obvious these two should have had more to do with each other. Like, she's, you know, she seems like she would be simpatico with him and that they could have had some good times.
Yeah, I agree. I also went in a Deshaun direction for the 90210 part of this answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that Deshaun and Dylan would vibe because they were both cool guys, but for different reasons.
Sure.
And like Chris Williams, you could throw into anyone's storyline and he would have improved the pairing. Like put him in the Castle Walsh kitchen with Cindy for all I give a shit. That's mm-hmm. always going to like net be an improvement. But yeah. Quote, Agent Hardell in the Punta Brava scamily mix somehow. Mm-hmm. I just think, you know, that he has like the Men in Black sunglasses, a skinny mm-hmm. necktie.
Yep.
I'm getting a little sweaty even talking about it. So let's move on to Melrose. And this could still happen, I guess. But because I think Jack Wagner and Alyssa Milano have similar like playing what they can for comedy without being inappropriate mm-hmm. energy.
Yep.
The challenge, of course, is how you physically frame the shot because she is a tiny forest creature and he is regulation tall. But I just enjoy their energy. Like, she has Mancini energy that he can play off of, but she's not as much of a sociopath as Michael. So, mm-hmm. and again, I don't know if this happens or some variation on it happens, but as we plod through season six, Jennifer and Alyssa Milano and Jack Wagner making his own fun are like some of the only bright spots or non-snoozy spots. So I'd like to see that, and maybe we will. A girl can dream.
Indeed. Let's hear clip three.
Hi, ladies. Okay, you're stuck in your worst nightmare, and you can only pick one. Do you have David Silver teach you to freak dance? Do you have Brandon Walsh teach you a lesson in politics? Or do you have Kelly Taylor teach you anything about psychology? That's all. Bye.
Go first.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer. I'm going to be the cousin that David teaches how to freak. Absolutely. I think he actually would be bearable in that context. Just my opinion.
I feel like he'd be real judgy, and he would not make it fun. That's my theory on that. This seems counterintuitive because of how mean I am to her on Again With Them, but I would say learn something about psychology from Kelly, because if nothing else, it would be funny afterwards to be like, and this is what she thought this would mean. And and just talk about how she was wrong and confused and annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I'd see your point about David, but keeping in mind that this is before he decided to skip a grade, so he wasn't Lord Pissface yet.
That's a great point. Great point.
Like, yeah. Later on in the same party, there is sort of like the piss face turn, as it were, but
it's true.
At that point, it was still safe, but I respect your do it to make fun of it, Kelly mm-hmm. pick.
Let's hear clip four.
Hi, I know you did a drunk dial you, so that's exactly what I'm doing. Love the podcast, love you both. So I am watching America's Next Top Model, season 6, episode 1. They drove the girls up to a fake hotel, and they labeled it the Bellage. They said, you're in the heights of Beverly Hills, everything's great. We're taking you to become, quote-unquote, America's Next Top Models. They also showed Bellage twice. Is the Bellage real, or is that a reference they stole from 90210? Would not surprise me if Tyra did that. You know, we're rooting for her. We're all rooting for her, but I don't know. She definitely steals. Okay, thanks. Love the podcast. Have a great night.
I love this question. I feel like this is like when people who watched Seinfeld found out that Jay Peterman was a real catalog and not something mm-hmm. that they made up for the show. Because, yes, there was at the time a real Bellage Hotel. It is in West Hollywood. Since that time, it has been rebranded. It is now called The London. but it still exists. I swear we've talked about this before, too. I'm going to link it in the show notes, but you can click through the pictures. It's definitely had a facelift since the time that it was on this show and Melrose Place mm-hmm. 5 trillion times. But when you look at the photos of the pool, you're like, oh, yeah, there it is. That's the pool that Kelly and Dylan made out in for sure, because it's mm-hmm. still right there on the rooftop. But yes, it's real. Tyra does steal, but this time she didn't.
Yeah, we tend to buy each other Starverse branded gifts on birthdays and holidays. And I have a search trap set on eBay for vintage Bellage materials, and something just popped today. So,
ooh.
Yeah,
that's birthday, exciting.
There's always a birthday coming.
It's true.
But yeah, it is real. Also, I feel like I know that caller's voice, but I'm not totally sure. So, caller, if you've ever written a game time for our sister podcast, then I'm correct.
Let's hear clip 5.
Hey, Tara. Hey, Sarah. So I have been listening to Again With This since you guys started it, a long time Extra Hockey. Great podcast listener. I actually am millennial, so I have neither watched Melrose and Now 210 until listening to this podcast. I have since rectified that, but I started listening. And I used to listen to it as a what's going to happen next kind of thing, which I found, then watched the shows and found immediately your podcasts were more enjoyable, personally, which is funny. But the reason I'm calling is since we've gotten into the Lisa Rinna era of Melrose, I have a fun story to share and then a question. I once went to Chicago on Broadway with my dad, and it was intermission, and we went and got some drinks from the bar, and I ran into a very good-looking man, and I apologized, and he was very sweet and very nice. Turns out it was Harry Hamlin, and then I turned to my left, and in all of her glory, there was Lisa Rinna. Her lips in person are just as big as you think they are. That's the best wow. way I can describe it. They actually were about to join Chicago, I think, the next week. So they were there, I guess, watching the press and having, like, director's notes and stuff. But anyways, that brought me to my thought experiment that I would love to see you guys. Two ways you can phrase this. What show and what 90210 or Melrose cast member would you cast in a Broadway show? And then what character from 90210 or Melrose do you think would best fit a Broadway show? Again, I still can't get over Lisa Rinna's lips in person and her hair, that hair. Oh, my gosh. Anyways, thought this would be a fun thought experiment for you guys. Let me know. Glad to finally call in. By the way, I forgot to say my name. This is Chrissy. Talk to you all soon. Thanks for doing the Lord's work and recapping these shows for us. Bye.
Chrissy, thank you so much for remembering to say your name at the end. I didn't put this in our doc because I figured we could do it on the fly, but I have a couple of these while Sarah is thinking of her answer. My answer is actually the same for character or actor, because I think I just associate them so much, and if they're not like their characters, I frankly don't want to know. So staying in the Candor and Ebb world, I'm going to say Laura Layton or Sydney Andrews for Sally Bowles. She's someone who has to be like both brassy and exciting and sort of spiky, but also vulnerable. And to me, that's Sydney straight up and down, honestly. And her one-time husband, Thomas Calabro and or Michael Mancini as the music man, because he has to be really charming, but also a complete con artist. So those are my choices. And I love everything you said about Lisa Rinna and Harry Hamlin. Frankly, that's exactly the kind of encounter I would want to have with them. So well done.
I'm going to go with Damn Yankees, and I'm putting the same two characters in it. Yes! Michael Mancini as, you know, the devil. Mm-hmm. And then as Lola, of course, Laura Layden.
Perfect. I'm glad we're aligned. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, clip six was too garbled for us to play, but it was not so garbled that we couldn't make it out. So the question is, from yet another no-name caller, how do we think Jane Mancini or Donna Martin would do on Project Runway? And I gave this possibly too much thought, but I'm going to lay out my case and then you can go next.
Okay. So
based on their output as seen on the show as fashion designers, I think they are about equal when it comes to both creativity and technical prowess. We don't see them do a lot of actual sewing or cutting or any of those things. So I do, however, think there would be some producer intervention to keep them both around because they would make good TV for completely different reasons. Jane would be an absolute bitch. She would be really haughty and rude in her talking heads while everyone else in their talking heads talked about how delusional she is about her own talents.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna would be all the other designers' favorite little sis. Like, they would volunteer to help her finish stuff or show her how to do things herself that she would inevitably fuck up. Like, I can see Christian Siriano being like, no, honey, this is how you put a zipper in, you know, because she just doesn't know. So Donna would be in the bottom for the first three challenges, and the last one, producers would be like, all right, we can't keep doing this, and then they would send her home.
Mm-hmm.
Jane, I think, would be her season's carousel. She would do one thing over and over for the whole season and then get kicked out before the final show.
Okay.
Sarah.
I like the way you're thinking. Mm-hmm. I think they do about the same with one caveat.
Okay.
I think that they both muddle along sort of in the lower middle, like not on the runway, being asked questions at the end, not in the top three, not really in the bottom three. And then either they get knocked out in the unconventional materials challenge for being too safe, or they're made team captain in a team challenge and nobly take the blame for the losing team's dated, uncohesive designs. So I think that they're similar enough in terms of personality. Like, I think your Jane haughty bitch comment is valid, but I'm sort of thinking of like earlier Jane, and I just don't think that works. The other possibility is that her teammates team up to vote her out because she loses the money bag at Mood, or a teammate named Richard like steals it. Or a dog named Chris eats it at Mood. But the one other possibility is that Jane pulls a Gretchen and makes the final because the judges conflate predictable Eileen Fisher-esque neutrals with ironic Balenciagan commentary on normcore, and she gets to the final and wins, but I don't see that happening. I think they're out in like episode five, both of them.
I mean, fantastic.
This was such a fun thought experiment, though. Thank you. No,
it was, for sure. Let's hear clip seven.
G'day, Tara. G'day, Sarah. This is your mate from down under, Anthony calling, Anthobuzz. Keeping this one super sweet and simple this time around for a change, with a little question, which is, in your current timeline where you were up to in Melrose Place, do you feel the show has jumped the shark? And if so, when did it jump the shark? Keep doing the work you're doing. Also, for the listeners, if you're not on the Patreon, come join us. There is so much fun to be had. All right. Till next time. See ya.
I mean, that's certainly true because Anthony is in our Discord, which is a Patreon exclusive perk, posting some of the most absolutely demented period Melrose Place press shots that anyone has ever located. And this is important. You all need to see it. And if you're not on the Discord, you can't. Sarah, why don't you go first?
I shall. First of all, Anthony, wonderful to hear from leading Laura Layden archivist.
Yes.
Anthony, thank you for calling. And like, I, you know, yes, it has jumped the shark. For sure.
Yeah.
From the middle of a tryingly beige season six without much to pay attention to or keep us awake. As to what did it, that was a trickier question. And I think it was the contrived wedge the show put between Amanda and Peter. Mm. In a larger sense, it's just season five. Like, characters not even hurtling, but like ambling towards very obvious on-ramps like 20 weeks in advance. Mm-hmm. Then they're replaced by lesser versions that the show's writers couldn't be bothered to really distinguish from the previous ones.
Yep.
Samantha and Megan, who are honestly a nonstop thrill ride compared to the greater Cleveland Cooperverse. And then just, you know, once the show lost sight of Marcia Cross / Amanda and Peter's chemistry as their most valuable players, there we were. And there was almost nothing anyone could do except make a lengthy list of David Charvet's mispronunciations, which, like, bless. And I know he tried, but yeah. I just think season five-ing. But I'm interested to hear what Tara has to say.
Yeah, I think it's inarguable that Melrose has jumped the shark, like where we are now, particularly in the back half of season six. I would pinpoint the moment to when Kimberly's like brain fog first comes back, because prior to that, they've really gotten away with just letting her do whatever. And like, none of it made sense. And I'm sure we complained about it at the time. But looking back from this vantage point, it's like, we didn't know how good we had it when Kimberly was somehow out of jail and hosting an advice show on the radio.
Yeah.
That feels like a golden age compared to the shit we're like slogging through now. And so when it was suddenly like, no, she's better, just kidding, she's not. It's like, why would you do all that work to make us believe that like her sanity came back because Peter the surgeon helped fix her, only to be like, just kidding, she's got a tumor again. Like, I know why, you know, they had, she wanted to leave the show, or they wanted her to, and that was the convenient way to do it. And there was, you know, canonical precedent, but I still don't think they earned it. Plus, it went on for so long, and like, they had it beaten, and she's cured. Just kidding, she's not. It's like, just exhausting. But it, you know, even if everyone does not agree that was it, I think there's no argument. It certainly happened when most of the original cast dipped in the season five finale. Because it's like truly not the same show now, honestly.
Yeah.
All right, we have one more question. Let's hear clip eight.
Hiya, comment and question from a first time, long time. I started reading Nails Recap when I was in middle school, and I am now closing in on middle age. So, damn. But, sincerely, I believe that your work and that of the extended TWAP universe really helped shape me into a much more thoughtful and considered consumer of culture than I otherwise would be. So as much as people might be dismissive of that, I think it's a really essential piece of how we move through the world and the kinds of citizens of the world we become. So shouts for that. We love it. We stan. You are both mother. Thanks for that. I need to ask you about these two stupid ass TV shows. I would love to hear from each of you your most and least favorite storylines for each of the main cast members for 90210 and or Melrose Place. And to keep interesting, let's limit the least favorite to the show's respective good years. So for Melrose Place, that's after Amanda shows up through season five, I guess. And for the Bed Niners, it really should be the Brenda years, but I say extend that through college because my fave Kelly storyline is Cult Kelly, and my least fave is anything having to do with her meddling career. Can't wait to hear yours. Peace out from Merlin Boston.
I think that was a name at the very end. I heard Boston, and then I couldn't quite make it out. But I know that this person is, I'll say, Sister K from the Discord, because they were on there saying, right after the calls came in. So hello, we know it's you. And this caller also called immediately afterwards to explain what they meant by "you are mother." Which, like, we understand.
We know.
We're aware. Thank you. So And we also did not assume that they meant for all of the main cast members. So we just narrowed it down to, like, we could pick our most or least favorite cast member and then do our most and least for them. Well, of course, I had to go with Brenda, my forever love. My most favorite storyline for her, in the sense of, like, going over more than one episode, is bad Brenda in Paris, smoking, going to sleep with her makeup and her bodysuit on, getting a yeast infection, only because it lasted into the main part of the season when they're back in school, and we get to see her still smoking and talking to the producer of the backstory, talking a whole bunch of shit about all her friends, not knowing how television works. Poor sweet Brenda. She learned a tough lesson that time. And least favorite storyline for her, Brenda as obviously being manipulated by plant FBI agents, animal rights activist in her final season. Just never bought it. And I think Shannon Doherty tried, but it's too preposterous and really trying to undercut her sympathy as a character as much as possible before her exit from the show, which sucked. Sarah.
Well, I actually went with Valerie, who was not my favorite, but I did want to talk about the fact that I hated pretty much all of her fucking storylines and always wanted justice for her. And also, I knew that you would pick Brenda, and I think that that is what the universe wants. So yep. I'm going with Valerie Malone. And my favorite storyline for her actually was the Punta Brava caper. She was a natural. Yep. She manipulated Jonesy and Dylan. She got paid. She wasn't fucking having it with Kevin. She was pretty good with stupid baby Erica. And I thought that that respected Valerie's array of gifts and also her, you know, array of gifts.
Yep.
That triangle bikini lives in my heart. She looked great. She did great. Mm-hmm. She got rich. Love it.
Yep.
But the show fucking hated her, and I'm still kind of mad about how she was treated, but the least acceptable, let's say, in my opinion, was that yet another self-destructive downward curly Q, as we used to say about Jen Lindley on Dawson's Creek, but the one where she unwittingly and without protection sleeps with an addict and has the HIV test spiral.
Yeah. That
obliges fucking goddamn Lord Judge Face of all people to be both smug and a bitch and like pass that off as supportive, basically. Yep. I just despise David at this point in the show. And doesn't he sleep with someone who's underage like 10 episodes later?
Yeah.
I have always hated this for Val, and I hated how the show made it out like her obvious insecurities, A, had to be retro-engineered as a result of childhood abuse, and B, still shit on her for being human and wanted us to root for Kelly bafflingly. So that is my answer. I'm looking forward to going back to not thinking about the many ways in which the show constantly threw her under the bus.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that. We also got some texts. The first one of these did not have a name either, but I think they're probably Canadians since they were complimentary about our appearance on the History of the 90s podcast. Thank you. This person writes, my thought, Megan is always the least valuable player on Melrose. Yuck. Boring! Double exclamation marks. It's true. I don't know if Megan is worse than Coop, but she's bad.
Yeah, I think she's not worse than Lexi. Lexi is just like aggressively bad at, like, you know, Lunar is not a good actor.
Yeah.
And she's, I mean, she's, you know, pretty to look at, but ugh. I mean, that said, Megan is extremely boring, and the show's retrograde attitudes about her previous career And also just pairing her up with the worst people and making her seem like a sea-doo fell on her head. I don't love it. So, yeah.
Fair.
It's close. That is. So, yeah.
Indeed. We have a selection of remarks from Paul. Paul writes, I love Dave. Hey, who doesn't love Dave?
Aww. Dave.
Paul also loves how sweet Sarah D sounds when she wishes someone happy birthday, unless she's just happy for the $50. Look, it can be both things.
Yeah. Also, I like birthdays. Yeah. Happy birthday, Paul.
It's true. You do love birthdays. And Paul also would like to know, why is it pronounced short-lived? Great question.
Because Tara's pretentious.
Because Tara's pretentious? Is that what you said? Well, look, I do think that this one has like crossed the line to where when you do say short-lived, people think you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The history of language is the history of tyranny of the masses. And it's short,
I know.
It's short-lived now. It's not short-lived anymore.
Well,
sorry.
Okay, but can I explain why it formerly
irregardless.
Was?
I understand
yes.
that is the former correct way to do it. I'm just saying people that hold on to that sort of thing are just, you know, you're swimming against the tide.
Look, I'm not going to yell at anyone who says short-lived.
For the tid.
I understand that it has changed. I get it. And it's not like as bad as irregardless, for example, although I think that's another one that people just say and don't get corrected on. But the theory of why short-lived versus short-lived is that you're not saying live like as in the verb, how long something lived. It's lived as in using life in a modifier way. So you're describing the life of something. It was short-lived. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I get the logic. I'd never said it short-lived until I knew you. But that's half my life. So I guess we just say short-lived now.
Look, I'm sure I said short-lived too. And weirdly enough, here's where I learned that how to, you know, air quotes, correctly pronounce it. The Twitter feed of Dave Holmes, the former MTV VJ. Like, I don't even remember what context he posted about it, but it was like long enough ago that I think we were living in New York. So,
oh my God.
Time.
I feel like we had a conversation about this like in a Starbucks too.
Maybe.
That's, yeah.
Anyway, Dave is disgusted.
We are long-lived, is what I'm saying.
We are. All right, moving on before this splits our marriage
apart.
Not
that I'm disgusted. It's just that obviously nobody says short-lived anymore, and you're just out there saying it all the time. It makes me wonder if you think you're better than all of us.
Oh, my God. You
just
know
you,
I think that.
Just better than you and your raisins.
All right, moving on.
No.
Before we all have to end our professional relationship.
We hate you guys.
We got this text from Reva. Reva writes, I've called in before, but this is super last minute, and I'm still half comatose from watching the last few episodes of Melrose Place Season 6. Relatable.
Yeah. Yep.
I know everyone hates post-Brenda 90210 episodes, but Season 5... and on is when I was able to watch it on a regular basis. The situation, summer 1999, before my freshman year of college, I was hung up on a complete dickwad who, to compare him to someone in the Spelling universe, he had the facial expressions of Billy Campbell, and the rest of him was Craig Field. Oof.
Ooh. Well, okay.
My point being, going to this ridiculous faraway land was somewhat comforting, Brenda or no Brenda. Don't spoil it. My routine was wake up, watch reruns of 90210 on FX, go to work, come home, talk to friends on AOL IM, and I'm sorry to say I tried to replicate hairstyles from the show, though I won't say whose or which ones. Who didn't? Look, it was the monoculture. We all tried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
Thank you, Reva. All right, let's get to some comments. Clip 9.
Hey, happy new year. Happy holidays, everyone. I am just hanging out at my parents' house because my dad's in the hospital and watching old TV shows like Little House and West Wing, Cold Case, Quantum Leap. And I forgot there's a Cold Case episode with Christy DeLise in it. And just wanted to suggest that as maybe something to watch in the future. It's called 8 Years. Anyway, that's all. Thanks. Have a great day. Bye.
There is lack of a pause or a comma there, and it sounded like her father was in the hospital because he was watching those TV shows.
Yes. No name. We hope your dad is doing better.
Yes. Yes. We hope that it all turned out well for your family. Happy New Year to you. And Cold Case, I watched the entire thing and developed parasocial relationships with the characters. It's not good, but mm-hmm. it's definitely somewhere that like mid-list Starversers show up. So thank you for that suggestion and look for that in a future again with this.
Yeah, speaking of hairstyles people ill-advisedly tried, that main girly and her wisps.
Yeah, it always looked like it was sort of trying to hide something, but then you would see her with her hair down and it was just normal. So it's like, why are we doing this? Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be a continuity issue, especially since you're not changing timelines. But anyway.
Right. Let's hear clip 10.
Hey, Tara. Hey, Sarah. So I have a question in regards to Melrose Place. I think it was the end of season 6 when Matt Fielding leaves. Maybe this is like a Mandela effect thing, but I remember him dying at the end of the season. I remember he was going to move to Seattle or wherever he was going, and he leaves, and then he gets in a car accident and dies. And we don't see it happen. But somebody comes back, one of the residents is like, oh, Matt died. And so I just wanted to know if anybody else remembers this happening, because you guys didn't go over it. And am I making this up? So if you could do a little deep dive into seeing if Matt died, that would be helpful for me. Cool. Thanks, girls. Bye.
Well, I didn't need to do a deep dive. I did a shallow dive. And so if you don't want to be spoiled for events later in season 6, fast forward a little bit. But this caller is right, sort of. Matt did die in a car wreck, but it happens off screen in season 6. We just hear about it. Apparently, he's like, we're told he was coming back to visit and then he got killed on the way. And it says on his fandom page on the melroseplace.fandom.com wiki, which we will link in the show notes, his memories of his neighbors were shared via a diary. So I guess we're going to hear about that later. But yeah, it's not Seattle. I guess it was San Francisco. I had already forgotten that detail too. And it was this season.
Oh my God. Well, if it happens towards the end of the season, we still have like 48 episodes to go before that happens.
Yeah.
Why?
We actually don't. This is a moderately short season. Like,
is this the one?
I think season 7 is like a normal length as well. But the fact that they killed him off screen, like, I guess they didn't know at that point that season 7 was going to be the end. But like every single other character comes back before the series is over, except not him for whatever reason. So he's better off, honestly, but it's still rude.
Yeah. Well, and like, why tell us they don't remember basic things about the rest of the characters?
Right.
Why even tell us that he got killed off, honestly?
Right. True. But this is also funny. If you go to his page on the wiki, trivia: Matt was one of the few male characters that was never involved romantically nor sexually with Amanda Woodward. Yeah, dude, we know he was gay. Like, not to doubt Amanda's capacity to make anyone want to sleep with her of any gender or sexual identity, but yeah, that's not really trivia. Let's hear clip 11.
Hello, Allison. This is Billy. Sorry, force of habit. Hi, this is Carl, and I'm listening to your current podcast. And, okay, let me just see if I've got this right. So we've got D&D advertising. Then it gets bought out, I don't know, by Craig. No. Craig coaxes all the clients from D&D. So now all the clients in Los Angeles, that need advertising, like, I don't know, Escapade magazine, they're with Craig. But then they all have to go to Amanda Woodward advertising. Okay. And this all happens like in a matter of weeks. I mean, not even months, weeks. But then on this episode, the Amanda Woodward agency is getting shut down because there's now going to be the Eric Barnes advertising agency. I don't know. So, like, again, if I'm any type of business in LA in the late 90s, why am I staying with any of these people? Like, why would I? I mean, unless I was Escapade Magazine and I was, you know, being run by Nancy, who thought that Billy was hot. Other than that, this show's very confusing to me. So please, I appreciate the podcast because you helped me sort it through. And it's really kind of like a therapy session. So you guys are like my therapist after I'm traumatized by watching this show. And no, I was not in LA in the 90s trying to get advertising, but God help me if I was. All right. Thanks so much. Love the podcast. This is so much fun. And send me your bill. Bye.
Wasn't there like another agency called like Sky High or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that was Craig's.
Yeah, that was the Craigney. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah, you coined the phrase that sums all of this up so succinctly. Go ahead, bust it out.
Yeah, business.
Business, Carl. What, I don't know what else we can tell
yeah.
you.
Yeah. this business we call show.
That's right.
Yeah, I think actually, Carl, you were a little generous with the timeline. That seemed to have taken place over a period of, I'm going to say, 10 to 12 days.
Uh-huh.
But it's just, you know, it's just moving chess pieces around and they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we still don't know where Chris is, technically. Right. So,
yeah. And Sydney's body was like still warm when some of this business thing was going on. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. it's season six. No one gives a shit anymore, clearly.
Yeah, it's true.
Clip 12.
Hi, y'all. I love you too. So I was rejected from something recently that I applied for, and I was listening to your podcast to cheer me up, old episodes from like the very beginning, and I listened to the episode where the HIV lady comes to talk to the kids, and I noticed something that you hadn't picked up on that really grossed me out. So she says that the first time she made love, she was 16 years old, which fine, but she made love to a law student. So that's super gross. How old would that make that dude? Like 22, 23? Like it could actually make him fucking 30 or 40. Anyway, once again, I'm just disgusted by the show and the old creeps who write for it. Thanks. Love you. Bye.
Good catch. I totally missed that. I didn't remember that detail at all, but Jesus.
Yeah. I think that is equal parts that, you know, it being a bunch of like 52-year-old dudes named Larry writing this stuff. But also, I think just as a culture 30 years ago, a 16-year-old, like we were just way more benighted about her agency and mm-hmm. what should be done to protect her from the predations of the, you know, Maxwell Caulfield characters of the, but like that was the pilot, a law student trying
right.
to
get with Brenda.
Yeah. Who he thought was in, you know, a college sophomore or whatever. Like, I guess he thought she was old enough to drink, but it was very obvious from the banana daiquiri that she wasn't. And this show definitely wanted to have it both ways in terms of the age of consent. So
it's true.
Yeah. Good catch.
They so easily could have fudged it by just saying he was a college student. So we could think, okay, well, they started dating when they were both in high school and now right. he's a sophomore or whatever. 'Cause that was very common when I was in high
oh,
school,
sure.
certainly. I wasn't because I was a loser, but people I knew were definitely dating college guys when they were still in high school. Anyway, huh? Enough about me. Let's hear clip 13.
Hi, Tara, Sarah, and Dave. It's Adam P. again. Thank you for doing another call-in show. I really like these, and it's really fun to participate and listen to them. So I hope your listeners like them. And again, thank you for all the hard work creating this very enjoyable podcast. My commute's super long now that we're getting back to the office. And between new episodes and the back catalog and Patreon episodes, it is just making my commute bearable. So thank you. I want to share a quick story with everyone about when I met a Bev Niner back in the 90s. I started university up in Ontario, Canada, and not Brock, and sadly not Princeton and New Jersey, but I was obsessed at the time with Melrose, which was season 4 when I started university. And how to now, season 6. In particular, I really loved Claire and Kimberly, my two favorites. And my university had its homecoming alumni weekend with an event at the on-campus nightclub. And it was the only bar and nightclub that some of my friends who were not yet 19 could get into, so we ended up there. And I got a bit buzzed, as you do, on whiskey sours or whatever drink I was doing at that age. And I was on the dance floor with my friend and looked over to see Kathleen Robertson in a small group of young women. And at this point, her hair was crazy, and this particular style hadn't shown up on the aired episodes yet. But it was very chunky, very highlighty, very lion's mane, and very layered. And I wasn't sure it was her, but I pulled my girlfriends aside and I told them, I think that's Claire. And they did not believe me. But eventually, with enough liquid courage, I walked over to her and said, excuse me, is your name Kathleen? And she smiled her smile and said, no, it's Claire. And I'm happy to say, I didn't stalk her fanboy too much, but I did get her autograph, and then I removed myself from the club, lest I creep her out. And she was very nice to me, and from Hamilton. And so I know people who went to high school with her, and I guess it's not out of the realm that she would have been at a university nightclub close to Hamilton. But and I think it was U.S. Thanksgiving at the time, so they probably weren't shooting. So anyway, that was good. And season 6, Claire was awesome, and I love when she told Kelly to get lost and take her stash with her in that season. All right, one question for you guys. Now that you're into Melrose season 6, do you think the showrunners gave up more on 90210 after season 7 or Melrose Place after season 5? And also, don't worry, Melrose season 7 is actually pretty good. Talk to you later. Thanks.
That's hard. I feel like, I mean, my feelings about the post high school years of 90210, or let's be real, the post Brenda years are well known, but this Melrose is truly such a morass. Like, I do think that on 90210, they were still trying to come up with like soapy things that were like fun and weird and different. Melrose Place, I think, is worse.
I think that, the results are sort of equally poor, but the gulf between the effort and the results is definitely like Melrose. Nobody's trying or even checking. Like, characters are addressing each other by the wrong name probably, and it's like, we're not shooting it again, fuck it, the check already cleared, like, that's fine. 90210, they were trying, it just sucked because they had people like, you know, Vincent Young.
That's true.
And his Mozart.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I would say Melrose gave up more, but it's still slightly more enjoyable, just my opinion.
It's true. When I was doing the clips last night for our next main episode, and I you know, scrubbed through the opening credits, and sometimes when they're playing that theme song, it still gets me. Way more so than 90210 did. Like, Melrose Place, it just, that song, it gets you hype for the episode, truly. And even when it's bad, it's still good.
Yeah, and you have enough soap pros. Like, I think the other thing is that, at least in front of the camera, the players on 90210 at that point still thought they were doing drama.
Right. And
it's like, this is a soap opera. Mm-hmm. Like, 7 people on screen right now are pregnant and hiding behind a mattress. Like, let's just not take it quite so seriously. And at least on Melrose, like, there are some people who are trying very hard to do capital A acting. Mm-hmm. And then there's everyone else who did daytime and is like, let's just, like, I've got a fucking tea time.
Yeah.
obviously, I'm talking about Jack Wagner. It's like, yes. let's go. And he knows what to do because he's been doing it for so long. So, I think they definitely gave up. But it's still like the Marie Celeste of nighttime soaps is just able to float along until someone finds it and tows it ashore in a season and a half.
Yeah, you convinced me. You talked me into it. Let's hear clip 14.
Okay, calling you on the phone and hearing your voice as if you're talking to me, as if we're like friends and I'm just dropping a voicemail was super weird. But anyway, this is just a little love note for you both, for Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting. That's I'm legally obligated to say it like that, right? But just FYI, I discovered your podcast in August of 2019 when I was moving from Nebraska to Austin, Texas. And it was a 14-hour drive, and I was looking for podcasts, so I found you randomly, and I listened to about 10 straight hours of Again With This, 90210, and ever since then, I was hooked. So I actually lived alone when I was in Austin. My husband stayed in Nebraska because it was only a year-long thing, and we owned a home in Lincoln, yada, yada, yada. But you ladies became like quasi-friends to me, so I tuned in all the time, and it was something reliable that would keep me company when I was all by myself. So since then, I have moved to yet another state and changed jobs yet again, and I have actually listened to the 90210 recap 2.5 times through. I'm on my third time. And when you started the 90210NG podcast, I almost called in to say, please, God, ladies, stop. Like, it felt like torture to put you through that every month. I legit felt bad. Like, I was going to offer you money to stop watching or listening to that podcast. Like, I felt guilty that that's what my Patreon money was purchasing. But it sounds like it's getting better and I'm coming around. But anyway, I've been going through some just kind of weird social, emotional, mental, you know, relational stuff in the past few months. And I've kind of come to realize that not only do I just like listening to your podcast, but it's actually a very comforting place for me. I save up episodes. Sometimes I bank like 2 or 3 so that when I'm having a bad day, I can listen to for a couple of hours of just you guys shitting on Melrose with the exact right level of humor and sarcasm and criticism and irony and attention to detail. And it never fails to make me feel better. And this sounds really stupid, but your podcast is sometimes a buoy, you know, in bad weather. It's kind of a lighthouse, to mix my metaphors. But you know, other podcasts are just too polished, or they're not polished enough, or they're too commercial, or they're too marginal, or I just fucking hate the hosts, but you ladies are, you're literally the standard by which I judge all other podcasts. And you're still my favorite. You guys are still the best. I just love the way you do it. So thank you for doing what you do, and it might not feel like it's a big thing, but to some of us, it is, and I appreciate it. And please, please don't stop shitting on stuff.
This person called back and said their name is Heather. Heather, thank you so much. This is so sweet. It's really lovely to hear. I'm sorry you're going through a weird time. I hope it's not the bad kind of weird. And I also just want to point out, I would be remiss if I didn't say that you almost never have to like store up episodes of either of us to listen to, because you can hear Sarah on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. You can hear both of us on Extra Hot Great. You can hear me and Dave on Listen to Sassy, all other fine podcasts that are all around. Dave also on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. We're bringing a lot of material to you on a variety of subjects. And if you like this, you'll probably like those. But thank you for this very sweet message. And we're glad that we helped you through a weird time.
Yeah, that was lovely to hear. I will also add that Quaid in Full does still exist.
Oh, yes.
It's coming back finally after a year or like 51 weeks. I am shocked by that. Jeb, Lund, and I both apologize. But there's like 50-odd episodes of that total if you like Dennis Quaid movies, or especially if you don't, because some of this shit is really bad starting in the mid-aughts. But, you know, parasocial relationships are real relationships, and we're glad that we're holding up our end of ours with you. Thank you so much for this audio note. It was very sweet.
Reading between the lines. I think she is a hitman for hire.
Well,
she's Chris. Oh, no.
Never spends too much time in any one location, darting around the country, mysterious jobs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, much like, Hartford, Connecticut is an insurance town, Lincoln, Nebraska is a hitman town. And this is a known fact.
Yep.
So good catch, Dave. We have one more message to play.
Hello, Alice, Samantha. This is Billy. I was just calling because, well, I don't really know quite how to say this, but I accidentally kissed Connie. It's a complicated story. Oh, I don't even know how I could begin to explain it. See, I was out celebrating my birthday with my friends, and then I got drunk, and I kissed Connie. Huh, wasn't that complicated. Well, I don't really know what to say. Oh, Connie's a lesbian. Bye.
Oh my God, Billy, thank you so much for listening. I hope it hasn't
been
too painful for you. It's Billy!
It's Billy. The first time we've ever said that with joy in our voices. Oh God. Next time on Again With This, Lexi's dad gives her a company. Nick gives Taylor useful Christine intel, and the casting department gives us Dead Dick. He's back, and he's a swinger. The absolute best place to gig me for these shitiest puns is our Patreon Discord. Join us on Patreon and get access to that, to over 100 bonus episodes, and if you join at the $5 level and up, you can listen to us talk about 902 and OMG instead of listening to it yourselves. Do not do that. Do this, again with this podcast.com/club. And you know that hotline y'all called to make this episode happen? It is always open. See you in episode 4 of The Call-In Show, 210-920-4699. I'm Party Line Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is three-way caller Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Rotarian David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
Just drunk dial us about anything that's on your wonderful mind. 210. What is it? Well, it used to be in the episode template and then you took it out. Sorry.
210. We hate you guys.
920. Ho. 99. That's 4699.
210. 4. What is it?
Oh my God.
920.
210. Just, Sarah, you just say it because clearly I'm incompetent.